Good morning. I guess it's almost afternoon, but I'm Steve Gregorian, President and CEO of the Detroit Economic Club. Welcome to today's meeting, and we're excited to make DEC history by holding the first ever meeting at Oakland Community College. And I want to thank Chancellor Provenzano and his team for being such terrific hosts, and you're going to hear from him in just a moment. I especially want to welcome our DEC members. If you're not a DEC member yet, just give me 2 seconds to myth bust. There's no nomination process or application process for becoming a member. There's no job level or salary requirement. I get this all the time. None of that stuff. We just want people that want to build their networks and hear from thought leaders on our stage. You're welcome to join. You can join at econclub.org. You know, we love having high school and college students with us at every one of our meetings. These students are here courtesy of our generous corporate sponsors. Their day already began with a private reception with Mr. Timmons, and I want to take a moment today to recognize those students, let you know who's here and who sponsored them. We've got the Warriors from Brother Rice High School, sponsored by Ford Motor Company, two groups from Oakland Schools Technical, one sponsored by Peter and his team at Oakland Community College, the other by Dow Chemical, and two student groups right here from Oakland Community College, one sponsored by Dow Chemical and the other Adam Robbins and the great team at Accenture. So please join me in a round of applause to welcome the students and thank their sponsors as well. A quick word about our sponsors. We would not be here without the generosity of those sponsors. So please, when you get downstairs to eat lunch, you'll take a look at the sponsor brochure, and we thank them because they're the reason we can bring you terrific program like today's. And of course, I love to talk about the history of the DEC, and we've got this great history of speakers that tell the history of our country. And Jay Timmons, I want you to know October 18th is a very popular date in our 88 history, and you now join a distinguished list of 14 other speakers who spoke on this day. Let me give you a few highlights. Starting back in 1943, we had CEOs at various times from NASA, United Airlines, Exxon, and we also had J.W. Marriott from our government in Washington, D.C., running for president. In 1972, we hosted Senator George McGovern on this date, and also in 2018, Larry Kudlow was at this podium. October 18th was also a popular date for debates here at the DEC. In 1982, we saw Governor Jim Blanchard and Richard Hedley square off in the race for Michigan's governor. And in 2006, Senator Stabenow and her opponent at the time, Mike Bouchard, debated for the right to represent Michigan as one of our two U.S. senators. So, Jay Timmons, we're pleased to add you as our 15th speaker on this day in history. It's your fourth appearance at the DEC, so congratulations and thanks for being with us. And finally, two ways for you to be involved in today's program. Just share with your social media network using hashtag EconClub. And you can also submit a question for the end of the program. And those questions will make their way to our presiding officer, who's about to go to work. Peter Provenzano is the chancellor of this fine community college. He's a DEC board member and a great friend to the DEC and to me personally, and a great supporter of many, many things in our community. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome our host, Chancellor Provenzano.
You didn't steal my notes, did you? Thank you, Steve, and welcome, everyone. I just have to say I'm absolutely thrilled to be hosting the Detroit Economic Club here at Oakland Community College for the first time, as well as Jay Timmons. It allows us to really showcase the amazing things that are happening here at OCC, our vision for a brand new advanced technology center, as well as discuss all of the amazing things that are happening in the state of Michigan around manufacturing, because manufacturing is not only critical to our economy here in Michigan, it's critical to the nation. And so we're really, really excited to have this discussion here with you this morning and into the afternoon. Jay is the president and CEO of the National Association of Manufacturers. He's also the chairman of the board of the Manufacturing Institute, which is NAM's workforce development education partner. Since Jay took helm in 2011, it's 2011, NAM has more than doubled in size, dramatically expanding its influence across the country. Now, prior to becoming the president, Jay's NAM roles include executive vice president as well as senior vice president of policy and government relations. Now, it's in here in his bio here, so obviously it's very important to him. I'll give it a very brief mention. It's bolded here that he also attended the Ohio State University. But we really like Jay, so how about a very warm welcome for Jay Timmons?
Well, thank you for that interesting introduction. I appreciate that. And I have to also say, when Steve was talking about the debates, I wondered if you were getting ready to challenge me to one, Peter, as I stood up here. It is great to be back with the Detroit Economic Club. Thank you so much. I have to also say, Steve, how impressed I think everybody is about how you've navigated through extraordinary circumstances through the pandemic and how you continue to steer the Detroit Economic Club to be one of the foremost forum for the exchange of ideas and the promotion of American business. You thank the sponsors, but let me thank you all as well for those who have sponsored this event, because you provide the ability for civil and rational discussion about the issues that face us every day. And I have to tell you, when I work in Washington, you don't usually see civil and rational discussion about issues that face us. So thank you for providing this forum, Steve, and our country's business community owes you considerable thanks as well. It is great to see many of our friends and also NAM members here today. I want to ask one question, though. He was supposed to be here. I don't know if he made it. Is Jeff Hand here? Jeff, are you here? There you are, Jeff. So, Jeff, thank you for coming. Jeff is the president and CEO of Ross Controls. Jeff, you all have been a member of the NAM for a long time. Do you know how many years? I researched it. 84 years. So thank you for that. I hope we're doing good for you, and if we're not, give me a call. I'll make sure that we take care of you. Also want to give a big thank you to Oakland Community College for hosting us. Community colleges like this one are really powering the future of manufacturing in America, and I had an opportunity to see a lot of the great programs here, and I'm so impressed. It's a prime example of what's possible when industry and government and academia work together. So thank you for hosting. You are equipping people, you're including many of the students that are here, with the skills to succeed in meaningful careers as creators and as innovators. And our industry is grateful because, quite frankly, we're hiring as fast as we can. So I hope those of you who might be thinking about what your career goals are, the students that are here today, I hope you're considering manufacturing as a career. You're gonna hear me say that several times throughout these remarks, because there's a lot of economic uncertainty out there right now. But here's one encouraging fact that I think everybody will want to know, and maybe you haven't caught this fact. All the jobs in our industry, all the jobs that we lost at the start of the pandemic, well, we've recovered them, and then some. There's nearly 12.9 million people who are working in manufacturing, and we're solving problems and leading into the future. And quite frankly, that's on full display right here in Michigan. And maybe that explains why 3/4 of manufacturers still have a positive outlook for their companies, even in times of uncertainty. And that's, by the way, according to the NAM's Manufacturers Outlook Survey for the 3/4 of this year. Our industry indeed remains resilient and resurgent. But you know, that survey also showed that manufacturers are rightfully wary of the challenges ahead. And that means that we need action, and we need it soon. There's still a real risk of going from boom to bust. Think about inflation and supply chains and global instability, especially Russia's war on Ukraine, and a workforce crisis with less than 6 job seekers for every 10 jobs that are open in America. I never thought I'd see that in my lifetime. It's really fascinating, and frankly, it's a real challenge. And all of these challenges, they're real. And almost 70% of Americans today say that the country is on the wrong track. Now, we've seen some moments, in spite of all of that, we've seen some moments of historic bipartisan action in Washington. And I want you to soak that in for a second, because that's critical. That's critical not only to the success of manufacturing, the success of our economy, but also for the nourishment of our democracy. There's more work to be done for sure, but manufacturers have the solutions, and I want to talk about some of those, because America's manufacturing roots run deep, certainly across the country, but in this county, this region, and this state, all of you know better than anyone. There aren't many individuals or industries in America that are more respected and trusted than manufacturing. I'd like to ask you, how many times, if you've been listening, you know, it's an election year, in case you hadn't noticed, when you see the ads, or when you listen to the debates, which I hope you're doing, I hope you're taking it all in, even if you have a partisan affiliation, don't just listen to your candidates, listen to the other candidates as well. And try to extract those nuggets from both sides of the aisle that are meaningful and that make sense. When you listen to those candidates and lawmakers, do you hear them trying to position themselves as being for manufacturing? Almost every ad I see, or every race I've witnessed, candidates want to be for manufacturing. But instead of having lawmakers tell us that they support manufacturers, we need even more leaders to listen to us and to what our concerns are. So working with our members, the NAM has developed a policy roadmap, and we call it Competing to Win. It's our agenda for manufacturing competitiveness here in the United States, and we released this latest edition just last month. It runs the gamut of issues from taxes to trade to regulations to immigration to workforce issues to energy and much more, with not only the problems or the challenges, but also with solutions. It's one thing to talk about the problems that we have, but you're just not credible unless you offer a solution as well. So this presents the solutions that Congress can act on right now. And I'm going to touch on just a couple of those today. I'd invite you to go to NAM.org and look at the whole document. But I want to touch on ones that are especially relevant for Michigan manufacturers. And those two are energy and the workforce. In terms of energy policy, manufacturers have long been champions of an all-of-the-above energy strategy. That's been, frankly, one of our competitive advantages here in the United States, our access to abundant energy supply. But it's become so much more than just a competitiveness issue. It's also a national security issue, especially as we look at Europe and Putin's war on Ukraine. We should, frankly, never, ever have our allies in a position of weakness against a war criminal. But that's where we are today. We should never allow America's energy supplies to be held hostage by a hostile dictator. As I was sitting here and being introduced and my smartwatch buzzed, I saw a headline that said, homeowners in New England may face blackouts during this winter. We're better than that here in America. We have the resources that we need to deal with these issues. We need to be realistic enough to know that domestically produced oil and gas, including on federal lands and water, are critical components to protecting American lives and livelihoods, especially as we develop ways to use them more efficiently and cleaner. After all, when we fail to produce energy here at home, it's produced elsewhere, often with a much greater negative impact on the environment. So sure, fossil fuels are part of the picture, no doubt about that. But we also have to continue diversifying our energy supplies to include more nuclear, hydrogen, solar, wind, and renewables, while at the same time unlocking the possibilities of technologies like carbon capture and climate neutral e-fuels. By the way, I got a fascinating look yesterday at the work that BorgWarner is doing with Hydrogen Solutions here in Auburn Hills, helping us to leverage hydrogen as a clean fuel source. I also had a chance to tour American Axle's technical center yesterday, and that's another remarkable example of research and development in action. Harnessing all of these options that I just mentioned is how we bolster our national security. It also helps us enhance our competitiveness, and it also protects our climate. These goals, by the way, are simply not mutually exclusive. Manufacturers across all sectors have long been developing solutions and ways to use energy more efficiently while contributing even more to economic growth and creating jobs. And we are succeeding time and time again. We don't need to rely on government dictates and regulations to make this happen. Incentives, sure. But the real answer is innovation. The type of innovation that manufacturers in Detroit and automakers, quite frankly, in particular, are leading every single day. With hybrids and electric vehicles and more efficient engines and fuel technologies, you're literally driving us into the future. We're seeing capabilities that we hardly imagined until recently. Next year, as you all well know, Michigan plans to unveil the first stretch of road capable of wirelessly charging an electric vehicle. That's just incredible. Pardon me. So what we have to do to make sure this reality continues is we have to make sure that government policy, federal policy in particular, is making it possible for us to continue innovating here in America. So what does that require? Well, we lay all that out in Competing to Win. And first up, it requires permitting reform so that we can get to work on the investments that the bipartisan infrastructure law and the CHIPS and Science Act make possible. That infrastructure law, that CHIPS Act, those were two of those amazingly bipartisan bills that were passed in this Congress. Now, one of the ways that you here can help is just by reminding people what permitting reform really means. A lot of people think we're just talking about one or two sectors or one or two energy sources when we talk about permitting reform. But in reality, we're talking about nearly every part of the American supply chain. Infrastructure projects, roads, bridges, pipelines, the electrical grid. We're talking about every kind of energy development and rare earth minerals. We're talking about manufacturing facilities where we make the products that America needs. All of these are vital to our economic competitiveness and to our national security and to solving the problems that we face right now here in this country. And yet it can take years and years just to get the okay to build a road, to build a power plant, or to build a factory. There are proposals in Congress right now, that would change all of that. And those proposals should pass before the end of this year. And the administration also has the power right now, and they need to leverage the one federal decision policy that we secured in the infrastructure law. You know, if you think back a few years when the pandemic hit, it was manufacturers who developed the vaccines to save the world from a new and deadly virus in less than a year. Less than a year. That's the pace at which manufacturing moves. But we have a government so bogged down in bureaucracy that it could take 5 years, 10 years, just to approve the construction of highways. Those highways that will actually move those vaccines, or any other product for that matter, or the power plants that will supply electricity to our factories. Permitting reform is about modernizing that process, to minimize delays and to reduce needless litigation. There's no reason, think about this, there's no reason to operate at a 20th century pace when we live in the 21st century. It's not about cutting corners. Let's put that on the table. It is not about cutting corners. It's about keeping up with the world around us. and the speed at which the world is evolving. In addition to permitting reform, let's remove regulatory barriers that slow access to that domestic energy supply. Let's promote access to federal lands for responsible mineral and energy exploration and efficient electric transmission and storage. Let's ramp up the domestic deployment of energy-efficient technologies and support their development globally as well. Let's expedite the legal and the regulatory processes for exporting energy technologies so that we can sell what we pioneer here in America to countries around the world. Let's be smart about any new regulations, which means we shouldn't change air quality standards like rules on ozone and fine particulate matter or nitrogen oxides before we prove that we can meet current standards. And the SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission, they shouldn't impose climate reporting rules on the entire supply chain when companies don't even have the technology or the methodology to collect the data that the SEC is asking for. Let's reject calls for counterproductive new taxes on energy manufacturers that would disrupt the supply chain and domestic supply and increase prices for consumers, including manufacturers who use one-third of the nation's energy supply, which leads to more inflation, or on consumers. Let's protect small manufacturers from a huge tax increase at the end of the year by making sure that Congress fixes the tax code to preserve full expensing for equipment and machinery and 100% immediate expensing for R&D, the lifeblood of our energy and our transportation future. For some reason, and I don't really understand why, it's hard for policymakers, especially those in Congress, to grasp the fact that China, our number one economic competitor, gives manufacturers there a 200% deduction for research and development, for R&D. That's 200%, twice as much as the cost. Meanwhile, unless our Congress acts, our tax code is only going to give manufacturers here a partial research and development deduction, which could have painful economic consequences and chill our nation's leadership on developing new technologies and new products. With the rapid growth of battery technology, we also need to make sure that our domestic supply of critical minerals is as strong as possible as well. The CHIPS and Science Act is a big step forward in this regard, both for mineral extraction and for chip manufacturing, but we can't take our foot off the pedal. This too is a national security issue. The tensions in Southeast Asia, I think, make that pretty clear. We're seeing semiconductor fabs take root literally all over the place in this country right now, in my home state of Ohio, in the Arizona desert, in central New York, and everywhere in between. That's good for America. That's good for manufacturing here. So let's keep that going so that even more cars made in America are built with chips that are also made in America. Which brings me back to the workforce and the men and women who are responsible for making things in America. The workforce that is educated right here at Oakland Community College. To the students that are here with us today, who I had the great pleasure of being able to chat with before this event, let me say that first and foremost, we hope you'll join us in manufacturing. With the skills that you're honing here, you're going to be in great demand. I promise you that. And a future employer, quite frankly, might just be right here in the room. So be nice to everybody. And you know, the industry is already doing our part to inspire and to educate and to empower the next generation of creators, like we did through Manufacturing Day or MFG Day just last week across the country and right here, with OCC joining 30 businesses and 700 students in Oakland County to open eyes and minds to modern manufacturing careers. Thank you so much for doing that. So critical. And we do it through our nationwide campaigns like Creators Wanted, which the NAM is leading with the Manufacturing Institute, as previously mentioned, our workforce development and education partner, and with state partners like the Michigan Manufacturers Association. But federal policy has to be more aligned with manufacturers. And that's why the Manufacturing Institute, which leads our workforce policy development, has called for expanding the Pell Grant program to include short-term or accelerated education programs that provide skills and credentials that are in demand. Competing to win, that agenda that I mentioned previously, also calls for the amount of tax-exempt educational assistance that employers can provide to employees to be raised from the current $5,250 to at least $11,000 annually. We also want to see more investments in apprenticeship models so that students can earn and learn at the same time. And that provides practical training and it helps alleviate the burden of student debt. But you know, I think it's pretty safe to say we can't solve the workforce crisis without also addressing immigration. The fact that our population is growing at the slowest rate in history, it makes that pretty clear. So we need Congress today to fix the broken, unreliable immigration system. And clearly, we need border security. That's not a question. But we also need more avenues for people to come here legally and work. Got a frog, sorry about that. Oh yeah. Appreciate that. But look, when we're talking about immigration reform, we don't have to wait for the next Congress to alleviate visa backlogs. And that will help us bring more, That will help us bring more employer-based immigrants into the United States legally and to provide certainty for dreamers. And it will also provide work permits for refugees like the Ukrainians and the Afghans who we invited into our country, but who can't work right now and fill those jobs that we have open. So on immigration, on energy, on workforce, on permitting, on taxes, and many other issues that I didn't get into today, the message is the same for Congress. Fix it now. When you read the news today, it can be disheartening to know that so many believe the country is headed in the wrong direction. But a focus on policy, a focus on getting things done rather than blaming each other, well, that can change that. Americans want practical solutions. They don't want to have to choose between the extremes. They don't want to punish businesses for being successful any more than they want to punish businesses for being good citizens. So in this season of campaigns, manufacturers, well, we have our own campaign to run. It's a campaign for manufacturing and a manufacturing competitiveness agenda, for restoring faith in what's possible. Since America's founding, manufacturers have led amid pandemics and disasters, through wars and recessions, during peace and prosperity. And we're going to keep leading for centuries to come, staying true to the values that have made America exceptional and kept manufacturing strong. Free enterprise, competitiveness, individual liberty, and equal opportunity. I want to thank the students for being here today because you are the future of this country. I want to thank the rest of you in this room for your leadership, and I look forward to taking some questions from Steve. Thank you all very much.
Jay, thanks for your remarks. It's such an important relationship. Thanks for being here because, as I told the students, Michigan is home to 600,000 manufacturing jobs, and there's nobody that fights any harder for us than you and your organization. So thank you for doing that. And I know, too, that creating the future talent is so important to NAM and to the state of Michigan. You took a tour with Peter and team earlier, and it's the same tour that folks are going to be able to do after lunch. Talk about what you saw there and why that's so important and the great job that Pete and team are doing.
So what I saw was modern manufacturing at its root, right? So teaching the skills necessary for jumping successfully into a career. And the other thing about manufacturing, I think folks don't really quite understand, besides all of the technical skills that can make you successful, is jobs constantly evolve and change in manufacturing. So young people who are thinking about their careers, you know, their career in a manufacturing facility or in the industry may change many times over, but it's always going to be exciting and it's always going to be unique. And I think a lot of the classroom experiences here really kind of exemplify that.
Good. I want to dig into your remarks a little bit. You alluded to phase out of full expensing. So what can be done to reverse the phase out and make it permanent? And what else do we need to do to defend and build on that 2017 tax reform law? That's so important.
Yeah, so that 2017 tax law, honestly, I mean, when that passed, that was after 30 years of work by the NAM to get that done. And it was finally done. And when it was being debated, there were Republicans and Democrats who looked at us and said, yeah, I'm not sure we're going to vote for that. We didn't have the votes necessary. And I said this on behalf of the industry at the time. I said, look, if you do this, and if you invest in America by giving us these competitive tax rates, which will be lower than many other countries, many of our competitors around the world, we're going to make three promises. We're going to invest more in plants and equipment right here in America. We're going to create jobs and hire more American workers. And we're going to raise wages and benefits at higher levels than we have previously, because we will have the capacity to do that. We've done that every single year since then, 3 years of records in each of those areas. And those tax reforms and regulatory certainty helped us do that. One of the provisions of that tax code was full expensing, meaning if you buy a piece of equipment, you can write it off of your taxes that year so that you can keep investing in more and more equipment and build bigger facilities, produce more things, be more productive in the economy. If we lose that, it's going to have to be written off over a number of years. That's just not good for cash flow. It's not good for investment purposes. There's a couple of other things that are going to expire, too. I mentioned the research and development tax credit. And if we don't have a permanent and full deduction for research and development, we're going to lose that innovative capacity to other countries like China and other competitors of ours. And then also, we want to make sure that eventually, it's going to expire in about 5 years, that we make permanent the competitive tax rates for small and medium manufacturers who have passed through, whose taxes are done through a pass-through formulary, and that will expire as well. So we just need to get all that permanent, move on, and stay competitive.
Very important. Creators wanted.
And by the way, you asked what we could do. Yes. Anybody can call their congressmen and senators and express the need to get this done. This should be post-partisan, right?
Yeah.
Why should we be debating about something that will actually make us more competitive, provide more jobs? This should not be a partisan issue, and you can deliver that message.
Yeah, I was blown away by the 200% tax in China. Wow.
That's crazy.
Yep, great. You mentioned Creators Wanted. Tell us about the program, and I understand there's been some successes, too, for that.
Yeah, so actually we were here in Michigan a few months ago at the Dow Great Lakes Invitational, and just hundreds and hundreds of young people and students came through. Also their parents, which is also important, right? Because sometimes parents have the wrong perception about what manufacturing is today. What Creators Wanted does is we have a digital online portion of it, but kind of the gee whiz factor is the semi that rolls down the road and sets up camp somewhere, opens up into a triple wide, and it's an escape room concept. And young people are going through, and they're solving equations, they're learning how to work as a team, they're being creative. And what I find fascinating is a lot of times we'll go to these events, and sadly, you know, we have to start them with speeches, right? Because that's just what we do for a living. And the students are sitting there kind of like, oh my gosh, why am I doing this? This is awful. I don't want to listen to these old people. And but they're thinking to themselves, and you students tell me I'm right about this, they're not in school, so that's pretty cool, right? So then they go through the experience, and man, do they light up. They come out, and I mean, you just see these eyes that are like, whoa, this was cool. I want to be a part of manufacturing. Tell me more. So we do. We have a program called Creators Connect. It shows young people what what opportunities are available in manufacturing, and a lot of them walk away saying, I want to be a part of that.
Good. I probably have time for just one more before we hear from Peter, but let's talk about China a little more because that's really intriguing to me. They loom large in any discussion about the global economy for sure. How can we position ourselves for global leadership and continue benefiting from access to Chinese markets? That's really big.
Yeah, so I think, you know, there needs to be a little reality check, to be perfectly blunt. First and foremost, I think a lot of folks really didn't want to believe, I'm going to answer a question that you didn't ask about another country. Yeah. I think a lot of folks didn't really want to believe the threat that Russia was posing, not only to our European allies, but also to democracy and our basic way of life. And now we had a pretty big wake-up call. China is not Russia, though, and I want to make that perfectly clear. I mean, Russia is just a bad actor. There's just nothing, I can't even say anything good about the government there or what they're doing to the world and to the people of Ukraine. China, we've had a pretty productive relationship with China overall. There are problems, certainly, in terms of how they operate, which is a command economy, versus how we operate, which is a free market economy, and in terms of, frankly, stealing our intellectual property, sure. Intellectual property, which is a valuable asset of our companies. But to your point, they have a very large market. We want to be able to sell our products into their market, and we want to obviously have a reciprocal trading agreement that benefits both countries. So I do think it takes a whole of government approach to be able to deal with the China challenge. And the China challenge really is, you think about national security. The CHIPS and Science Act, that was absolutely critical for solving a national security concern that could have been just years in the making if we didn't bring chip fabrication back into this country, because there's a chip in everything that we produce. We need to also make sure that organizations, international organizations like the World Trade Organization, understand that we need a level playing field, that we need to have rules that are, you know, that both countries abide by. And then I would say we made a mistake in 2017 when we pulled out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, because that gave those rules, that specified those rules. President Obama negotiated that. He brought the NAM to the table. And I don't think we should have pulled out of that. So now we're starting to see other countries that were part of that agreement that are making their own agreements with China at certainly their advantage, which I don't blame them, but that disadvantages us. So I think we have to get realistic about China. I think we have to understand their ambitions. President Xi yesterday pretty much said he intended for China to dominate the world by the year 2047. Let's take him at his word. And let's make sure that we can peacefully coexist, but that we do not do anything that undermines our economic might here in this country.
Yeah, I read this morning that they want to get a little even more involved in their businesses as well.
So that's right.
That's the right. Reason why is the 2047 wishes.
That's right.
So good.
It's ambitious.
Yeah, good. All right, thanks, Jay. Let's hear from you guys, and we'll bring Chancellor Provenzano back up. And I know you've got some good questions from the audience.
We do, Steve. Can you hear me? We do. We actually have quite a few questions that are strolling in. We might have time just for a couple. The biggest question is around the theme of Michigan and the fact that we are...
Now, are you talking about Michigan the state or University of Michigan? Because there's very different answers here.
Touche. The state of Michigan and how
okay.
We are the center of the automotive industry.
That's right.
What do we need to do as a state to hold on to that rank? Mm.
My predecessor in this job was one of your former great governors, John Engler, and he understood the importance of doing everything you can to not only hold on to the industries that you have, but to recruit other industries into the state. I'm going to go back to that 2017 tax reform and just say once again what that did for us as a nation to make us more competitive. And now what you're seeing is 50 governors plus Puerto Rico saying,
I want to get a piece of this action. So how does that work? How do you get a piece of that action? Well, you make it attractive to do business here in this state. What we are seeing, for instance, in my home state, it's not my home state, but my adopted state of Virginia, and my home state, actually, of Ohio, they're lowering their tax rates to make it more competitive to do business, less cost of doing business in their state. Again, what's that lead to? More investment, more jobs, more hiring. And those are the things that we should want as a society. And you also have to make sure that the regulatory process is not stifling innovation, and it's not holding businesses back from investing and hiring and raising wages. And we also need to make sure that there is a focus on the need to develop domestic energy supply. Holistically, all of the above that I mentioned, including not only the fossil fuels, but nuclear and hydrogen and solar and wind, all of those things. It's a big job, but you know, that's why you hire a governor and a legislature, right?
How would you say that talent, the availability of talent factors into that? How would you say?
I think the good news for Michigan and every other state is every single state has the same issue right now. It's hard to find talent. We have 12 million open jobs in the economy. We have 800,000 jobs open in manufacturing. So I think that schools like yours that are focusing on training young people for the jobs of the future, I think they're the ones that are going to win in the end. That requires a partnership between business and academia and government. And when those three things come together, it's kind of unstoppable. And it's the model that you have here that I know other states, I mean, I hate to tell you this, but people are going to look at you and they're going to say, we want that in our state. So be prepared to be copied.
Okay. You're a winner. You're a winner.
We love being copied. We love, that's a compliment. So back to the talent, the need for talent. Do you think that businesses are apprehensive to create apprenticeships? And if so, why?
Well, here's a non-answer, yes and no.
Okay.
So no, they want to do that, right? The earn and learn model is actually works out really well. Yes, in the sense that sometimes there's some regulatory burdens to doing that. Some of those are from the federal government, and there's a federal definition that involves union labor versus non-union labor, and I think businesses really don't want to get into that, and they don't care. They just want to bring people in and get them excited and invested in their facility and in their particular industry and line of work. So yeah, they want to do it, and I think, again, it really involves the federal and state governments allowing that to happen and allowing, frankly, 1,000 flowers to bloom.
Okay, great. Maybe time for one more question. We have one here, actually, around the Inflation Reduction Act. Why was NAM so opposed to that? Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, well, first of all, I don't like gimmicks, and Inflation Reduction Act implies that you're going to reduce inflation with that piece of legislation, and that was never going to be the case. It was just a nice title. So let's just start there. But the other side of it was it raised taxes. It made it more expensive to do business here in this country. I'm not suggesting that a lot of the things that were funded and that money is being spent on were not good and altruistic things. There's a lot of good things. But you don't do good things by at the same time doing bad things to the people that are investing in creating jobs and hopefully raising wages. So it was very imbalanced in that way. Now, the good news about it is that Senator Kristen Sinema in Arizona, a Democrat, first term, she stood firm and she forced her fellow senators to get rid of a so-called 15% book tax. That would have radically harmed the ability of manufacturers to invest in new plants and equipment and other investments. So she got rid of that, which was really great. But unfortunately, you look at one of the things that was really problematic about that bill was a kind of a price fixing, if you will, of pharmaceutical products that will make it less likely that pharmaceutical manufacturers will create new cures and therapies in this country. Why would we do that? That makes no sense.
Okay, we have time for a DEC tradition where I will ask you a series of lightning round questions is what we call them. And so I ask a question, you just come, you know, whatever comes to your mind as an answer, that is your answer. And so we like to have a little bit of fun with it. So are you ready?
Green. That's my favorite color.
Did you see the questions already? last book read.
So I have a habit of reading 3 or 4 books at a time, which is really not very smart. But I'm reading The Confidence Man right now from Maggie Haberman from the New York Times. I'm in the middle also of The Divider, Peter Baker and his wife Susan Glasser. And then the last one I finished completely was Betrayal by Jonathan Carl, who is a great ABC news correspondent and my neighbor.
What did you want to be when you were growing up?
Okay, you're not going to believe this. The very first thing I wanted to be was a garbage truck driver. Okay. And so I got into politics. when I was 5 years old, I was totally infatuated by the garbage man. And I think it was, you know, going back to some of the classes in robotics that you have here, just watching that arm go up and dump that trash. It was fascinating. I'd ride my bike all over the neighborhood following him. He thought I was a crazy kid. By the time I got to maybe junior high, I thought, oh, I'm going to be a lawyer. Again, garbage. And I got out of that, decided I wanted to be in politics. Then I went to Ohio State. And what you didn't mention is I'm an Ohio State dropout.
Oh.
So I didn't get the piece of paper, but I did. I did go go to Washington. There was actually a battery test that said I should be a circus performer. So again, I got into politics.
There's okay. A lot of garbage
yeah,
in every
garbage.
Step of your life, yeah. I think.
Was that the longest lightning round answer that we've ever had?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Your very first paying job, garbage man?
Cleaning toilets at Rack's Roast Beef Restaurant.
At a what? At a roast beef restaurant?
Rack's Roast Beef.
Rack's Roast Beef, yeah. Okay. Your first car?
A 1976 Ford Pinto.
All right.
Ooh. Ooh.
Yeah, it was copper colored. It was pretty cool. I mean, it was, you know, I was attracting lots of attention.
I'm sure you were. That Ford Pinto, my goodness. So if you were able to pick any musician or band for a private concert in your backyard for your family and friends, who would that be?
That's easy. Coldplay. All right. Viva La Vida. Group. Lead it off. End it. I'd be really happy.
All right. Now, your bio here, I didn't mention this earlier, says you reside in Virginia with your 3 children and an assortment, this is the word, assortment of rescue dogs and other critters. Can you define other critters for me?
Besides my kids.
Besides
right?
your kids.
There's a lot of rescue dogs. I mean, I love rescue animals. But, you know, we have a lot of fish, so we have koi, and my daughter has a fish tank that had 3 fish, now has like 30. I wonder how that happened. We have squirrels and birds and chipmunks. We try to attract, we have a nice little backyard where we try to bring wildlife into it.
Okay, yeah, those are critters. Last question, advice to your 25-year-old self.
Well, the easy one is always look someone in the eye and shake their hand, no matter what the situation. But in all seriousness, I mean, I think that the thing that I think is most important is to be authentic. So I'm a gay man, and it was particularly hard for me to not live an authentic life. And in fact, I was outed. And that was pretty difficult. But what I found is that when you live authentically and you are yourself and the person that God made you to be, you will be happier in life. And the other thing that I would tell them about that is it always, always gets better. So be authentic, be who you are, follow your passion.
Thank you for that, Jay. Appreciate it. All set?
Good. Thank you. Sure. Thank you, Jay, and thank you, Peter, for presiding and for hosting. I mentioned earlier we made history here But I think we're also going to make history the next time we host you. We're going to come to the Timmins Zoo and see all of your critters down there. So you'll
host also come to the Timmins, also the Olson Timmins Halloween party. We do this every year. We haven't since the pandemic. We had 600 people at our house in 2019. Lots of animatronics, lots of people in scary costumes. If you want to volunteer, come on.
That's great, kind of yeah. Fun. So, well, thank you so much. You're welcome back here anytime.
Thank you so much.
We'll do it again sometime. Ladies and gentlemen, you'll be able to take the same tour that Jay took earlier today, and you'll see some great advanced manufacturing, robotics, and skilled trades facilities. And the OCC folks will take you on that tour. It'll be about 30 minutes. So it's really, really cool.
It's worth it.
I encourage you to see that. Tell your friends and colleagues to join the DEC because we are cool as well as OCC. So on time, every time, this meeting of the Detroit Economic Club is now adjourned. Thanks for coming. Enjoy your lunch and enjoy that tour. Thank you, everybody.